Welcome, everyone. So glad to have everyone join this session today. My name is Karim Zidane, and I'm a software engineer on the CS50 team. A few of our colleagues as well here at CS50 will tune in the chat to help with some of the questions. And this session is going to be on the CS50 tools, what they are, and how to use them. All right. Before we dive in, most of the tools that we're introduced today will require a GitHub account of some sort to use them. So if you don't have a GitHub account already, please go ahead and create one at github.com/join. All right. The documentation for the tools that we'll be using today also lives at cs50.readthedocs.io. So just in case you want to refer to this later or you want to learn more about any of the tools that we'll talk about today, you can just head to this URL for more details. Okay. So during this session, I will be giving you an overview of some of the tools that we use in CS50. That both teachers and students use, and that will make hopefully a lot of things easier when it comes to teaching the class or when it comes to taking the class from the student's perspective. And here are some of the tools that we'll discuss today. So we'll start by talking about some programming environments like the CS50 Sandbox, CS50 Lab, and the CS50 IDE. David gave a glimpse of that earlier, and these are simply tools that students use to work on their assignments and projects while taking the class. We'll then transition to some tools that would help students tackle these problems easier or the assignment easier. Tools like Debug 50, Check 50, Style 50, Help 50, and we'll explain what each of these does. And then we'll ultimately transition to talking about some of the tools that are particularly helpful for teachers such as Render 50 and CLI 50. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and start with the programming environments. So one of the problems, one of the challenges that we were faced with at CS50 until maybe a few years ago is that students who are taking their first computer science or programming class, it can be quite tricky for them to sort of set up their environment, to download the tools that they need, to configure them the way that they want or the way that the course expects. So this can be a very challenging thing to do, especially for students who are among the less comfortable students. And it was also a problem for us as teachers or as TFs, because different students use different machines. They use different operating systems. Some students use Windows, some students use Mac OS and others. And it can be the case sometimes that a tool is available for one platform, but not available for the other, or the configuration is different here and there. And so the burden sort of fell on us to provide this documentation for how to do so. And furthermore, troubleshoot the problems that would come up when it comes to installing and configuring these tools. And so at some point we ended up transitioning to these cloud-based programming environment, cloud-based meaning that the computers, so to speak, that are backing these environments live somewhere on the internet, on the cloud, and students will just be able to access these environments using a simple web browser like Google Chrome or Firefox, which should exist on most computers these days. And so the first tool that we'll be talking about today is the CS50 Sandbox. CS50 Sandbox lives at sandbox.cs50.io. And what is CS50 Sandbox? CS50 Sandbox is a temporary programming environment that students can use and that teachers can use as well. And so typically in CS50, we use CS50 Sandbox for whipping up quick examples during class or section for demonstration purposes, or things like distributing assignment solutions, so distributed compiled binaries for students to sort of give them an expectation of what they should be doing in this problem or try the staff solution before they actually tackle the problem. But it could be used for any number of use cases as well. So when you head to sandbox.cs50.io, you should be presented with something like this. We're gonna wave our hands on these configurations at first and click create. If you're not signed in with your GitHub account, you will be prompted to sign in and maybe authorize the CS50 app. So please go ahead and do that. And then ultimately you'll be redirected to an environment that looks something like this. So at the top here, we see a text editor with some line numbers on the left with syntax highlighting all of these colorful keywords and with automatic indentation as well that students use to write their code. At the bottom here, we have a terminal window that students use to interact with this sandbox environment via textual commands. And so they will be able to build their programs and run their programs and so on. On the left-hand side here, we have a file browser where students will be able to see their files and folders in this environment and manage them. So create them maybe, remove them, rename them, move them from one place to another, and so on and so forth. And then another feature of the CSFT sandbox is the cloning feature. So if you create a sandbox, maybe as a teacher, populate it with some files for demonstration purposes, and then click this share, you'll get this bit.ly URL that's highlighted in the screenshot. And then you can distribute this link in your assignment instructions or during class or something. And then when a student clicks on that link, they will get an identical clone of this sandbox with all the files, with all the contents that you created in your original one. And then they would be able to do things like follow along with you in class or other things. All right, so here are some of the features that exist in CSFT Sandbox. We have, like we mentioned, text editor, terminal window, file browser. We also have embedded web browser, although we didn't show that here, for students who are working on web-related assignments. We have X-Window supports for students who are using or classes that are using Swing in Java to create graphical applications, or in Python similar frameworks as well. And we talked about cloning as well. So let's go ahead and try to use CSFT Sandbox to see what that looks like. So I'm gonna go ahead and hit to sandbox.csft.io up here, and then I'm gonna create, and I'm already signed into my GitHub account, but if I wait for a few seconds while my sandbox loads, I should be presented with my sandbox environment, as we'll see in a moment. So just taking a second to load up. After the environment loads up, we're gonna go ahead and create a file, and then we're gonna write a very simple program just to demonstrate how things work. So here's my environment. Of course, it doesn't have anything yet. So to create a file, I'm gonna zoom in a little bit so people can see better, hopefully. All right, so I'm gonna click on this plus icon up here to create a new file. And it says here, enter the file name. I'm just gonna say hello.py, and then click on this green create file button. I now have an empty file. It doesn't show anywhere else on the screen, but if you look up here, there's this folder icon, which opens the file browser. So I can see my files and folders here if I have any. And so in this hello.py, I'm just gonna write a simple print statement in Python. So print hello world. And then down here, I'm gonna click on my terminal window to be able to run my Python program. And the way to run Python program, if you're familiar, is run Python, and then the name of the program, which is hello.py, hit enter, and it says hello world, so the program works. All right, so let me pause here for a second and see if we have any questions on the CS50 sandbox. All right.
Yes, Kareem, I have a question.
Yes, please go ahead.
Will the full URL be available? Because I know at least at my school, the bit.ly links would be blocked.
Oh, okay. So right now, the bit.ly link redirects ultimately to a sandbox.csft.io link. I don't think there's a way right now to get the full URL without the bit.ly link of the clone, but we can look into that, and maybe if you could email me after the session, we can see if there's any other ways around.
And Kareem, if I can interject, the bit.ly link actually just redirects to the sandbox link that you or the student sees. So if you literally just copy the sandbox link in the browser itself, that will work. You don't need bit.ly. Bit.ly only shortens it. It doesn't change the link.
All right, there is the answer. Okay, other questions on CSFT Sandbox? I got a question from one of our colleagues here. Do students need a GitHub account in order to use CSFT Sandbox? Yes, students need a GitHub account in order to use CSFT Sandbox at the moment. So that answers that. All right. Okay, so I'm gonna move on to our next tool for today. And our next tool is called CS50 Lab. So the documentation for CS50 Lab exists at cs50.readthedocs.io/lab as well, in case you'd like to know more details about that. And what is the CS50 Lab? A CS50 Lab is a more persistent programming environment with embedded assignment instructions in it. And so it's kind of like these that you'd see on platforms like Codecademy and like, where you have these scaffolded step-by-step instructions with some programming environment on the right-hand side, so the students can see the instructions and see their programming environments at the same time, and then sort of walk through their assignment and work on it one step at a time. And so here's one of the examples that we use in CS50. This is a CS50 assignment called Mario. And as you can see here, on the left-hand side, we have the assigned instructions with some rich text, with some headings, some paragraphs, some images, some code blocks, and more. And then on the right-hand side, we see a programming environment, in this case, pre-populated actually with some files, so distribution code, so to speak, Mario.c, where students will be writing their code for the assignment, and pseudocode.txt, which is also open, in this case, for students to write down some pseudocode, and then the terminal tab down below. And this has the same features as CS50 Sandbox. They're practically the same environment, except that in this case, we have the instructions here on the left. Right, so how does one go ahead and create one of these labs? Well, it turns out that these labs are backed by Git and GitHub. Luckily, you don't need to know too much about Git and GitHub to be able to create these labs. Just some of the basics, I think, will get you going. So what is Git? If you're not familiar, Git is a very popular version control system that developers and other people use in order to sort of keep track of different versions of their software and other other text files or other files in general. And GitHub is a popular code hosting service where you can create these so-called repositories or folders, so to speak, and then store your code in these folders. And then other people would maybe able to collaborate on that as well, if you give them the option to. And so let's take a look at that. So in this instance, for example, this particular lab lives at this URL, github.com/cs50/labs/3/2020/x/Mario. So let's go ahead and try to explain what that means. Let me exit my presentation here for a second and then maybe click on this URL. So right here, I'm at this URL, github.com/cs50/labs/3/2020/x/Mario/less. And this basically represents the CS50 labs repository. Within this repository, Git and GitHub allow you to create so-called multiple branches to keep different, to work on different versions of your files simultaneously if you want to. In this case, we use one branch per semester, for example, and this allows us to do things like sort of fork off one semester of another and then maybe update a new semester. So in this case, we have a branch for the 2020/X semester for the edX version of the class. And then within this repository, there are folders and file. So I went into the Mario folder and then went to into the less folder to be able to see the contents of this particular lab in here. All right, so let's take a look at some of the files that exists in this lab, or that this lab is composed of. So the first file that we'll take a look at is the cs50.yaml file. So right here is our cs50.yaml file. And if you're not familiar, YAML is a popular language that's typically used for configuration of applications. It's composed basically of simple key value pairs with some primitive data types. So in a very simple example here, to create a lab, we have the lab 50 key, as we see here near the left-hand side of the screen. And then we specify what files we want to include in our programming environments. So by default, this lab is going to have our text editor, our terminal window, like we showed before. In addition, this programming environment is going to include these files, the Mario.c file and the pseudocode.txt file. And these are so-called YAML tags. They basically are directives that specify special actions that the lab should interpret. And in this case, we're excluding star, meaning excluding all files by default, and only including Mario.c and pseudocode.txt, which is the two files that we saw open by default in this lab. Next up, we have our readme.md, and let's actually switch to the readme.md and try to take a look at what that looks like. So if you click on that in github.com, we'll actually see the original, generated version, which is the version that's rendered, similar to the version that's rendered in our lab, and we're gonna actually see the underlying text or the underlying contents of this file. So GitHub just tries to be smart here and render things for us. We really wanna look at the syntax. So let's go ahead and click on raw here on the top right corner. I'm gonna zoom in a little bit to see what we have here. And let me actually try to drag these side by side so we can see what's happening. So let me visit this in the browser. So lab.cs50.io/2020x/Mario/less. And then pull this on the side here so that we can see what things map to. Let me go back to github.com here. So for example, up here, we see that the heading, the big heading that says Mario, is simply created with plain text with the hashtag then space Mario. Same thing with the world 101, which is a slightly smaller heading. It's created with two hashtags and then world 101 with simple plain text. The paragraphs are just simple plain text. This code block down here, as we see, is created with these three backticks and then the same structure, the same number of hashtags. And this is a language that's called Markdown. It's a language that allows us to create rich text with simple plain text, as we see here. And these are some of the features of Markdown. But if you're interested in more features, you can go ahead and head to this URL, guides.github.com/features/mastering-markdown, to see some more maybe Markdown syntax and learn more about what else you can do with Markdown. And so next up, we have our custom tags feature. And so if you notice, if you scroll down right here, we have features like this video, this embedded YouTube video, Brian, giving an overview of the problem. And this is one of the features of TSAT Lab as well, is that it allows us to add certain syntax to our Markdown file, to our readme.md, to embed things like videos or this next button that we're going to discuss in a moment. And so let's actually go ahead and start with the next button. So this next button here is what allows us to implement these scaffolded step-by-step problems. If we click on the next button, what happens is that student is just going to see the next step. So the screen is effectively going to scroll down and we're going to see the next step. Clicking again, for example, see the next step. And the goal here is obviously to allow students to work on just one step at a time to try to simplify things for them. And the way we create this next button in CS50 Lab is using something called the next tag, the syntax of which looks something like this. So just by adding this to our readme.md, everything before this next button or this next tag is going to become its own step. And then everything after is going to become a separate step that's going to show in its own in the final rendered lab. Next up, we have spoiler tag. And the spoiler tag allows us to add this little spoiler button. Sometimes you want to add little spoilers or hints to students in your lab instructions. And so this button allows you to do that. And so by clicking on this button, you can reveal some hints about this assignment. And the way this is implemented, as we see here, is by simply including the spoiler tag up here, and then the text that we want to hide by default within the spoiler tag and the closing end spoiler tag. All right, so this is another example of another tag that's supported by the CS50 lab. The final example is the video, and this is pretty simple, is we have here, as we have here, the video tag, and then simply the link of the YouTube video that you would like to embed into your lab instructions. All right, so this is a brief overview of some of the Markdown features, some of the CS50 lab features, specific syntax. I'm gonna pause here maybe for some questions on maybe CS50 lab or CS50 sandbox. So what questions do we have on that? All right, any questions on CS50 lab?
Quick question is there, will there be an opportunity to see like a slower version of what you described basically?
Sure, absolutely. So maybe we can record some of these sessions after this one. And then maybe we'll show more detailed step-by-step instructions on how to create one of these labs, if that works. I do know that we already have instructions on how to create such labs right now that live on csfd.readthedocs.io/lab. So you can also refer to that for textual instructions or for more details. What other questions do we have?
Kareem, I was able to get into the lab version of Mario by going to the explicit URL, but is there a dashboard in the CS50 curriculum where the lab view is hyperlinked? Or do you have to go manually to the lab view?
I can field that one. It on the new version of the AP website that'll be posted in the next couple of weeks, it'll exist there indeed.
Okay, so I'm gonna switch now to our next tool, which is the CS50 IDE. And the CS50 IDE is our final programming environment for today. It lives at ide.ts50.io, and it's a cloud-based programming environment as well. But unlike the CS50 lab, CS50 IDE is meant to be a more persistent programming environment. It's meant to be a more general purpose programming environment used for long term. And it also has more features. So whereas Sandbox has very basic, very simple features, CS50 IDE actually adds more advanced features, so to speak. Unlike CS50 Lab, the CS50 IDE doesn't currently have embedded assignment instructions in it. Like David disclaimed this morning, we're working on some improvements for these tools to ultimately merge them all together. Ultimately what we're hoping for is to sort of have them all be the same tool and be able to turn features on and off as we need to. All right, so the IDE is at ide.cs50.io. If you head to that link, you can see something like this, and you can sign in with your GitHub account. And once you sign in with your GitHub account, you'll be presented with something like this. So right now we have a screenshot of the CS50 IDE, which looks very similar to the CS50 sandbox environment from before. At the top here, we have the text editor with line numbers, syntax highlighting, automatic indentation, and so forth. At the bottom, we have a terminal tab where students can interact with their IDE using textual commands. So build their programs, run their programs, and so on and so forth. On the left-hand side here, we have a browser where students can see the files and folders that they have in their IDE and also manage them. But in addition to that, at the top here, we can see a menu bar where we even have more preferences and more options for this environment. On the right-hand side, we have a share button and a cute little cat. The share button actually allows us to share an IDE with other users. So it allows students to sort of collaborate on the same assignment or projects, given that the teacher allows them to do so, by sharing an IDE of one of them with the other, and then they will be able to collaborate. On the right-hand side here, we have a few panels here, the first of which is the Collaborate panel, and this is where students, or maybe a student, if a student shares their IDE with a teacher for some help or something, they can chat in real time in this Collaborate panel. It also has more custom layouts, so you can drag and drop these tabs wherever you want, and you would be able to create basically your own layout. So in this case, I have two text editors side by side and then the terminal window at the bottom, although I can create more layouts if I wanted to. If you don't prefer the light mode, CS50 IDE also has a dark mode, and so you can switch to that as well. And one of the other features of the CS50 IDE is that it has this revision history. So it keeps track of your saves whenever you save a file or something, and then you can sort of toggle back and forth or switch back and forth between these different revisions using this slider at the top and by clicking on the revert button, as we see in the screenshot here. One other feature of the CS50 IDE is that it has a graphical debugger that supports C, C++, and Python, and that will allow students to step through their programs one at a time to try to figure out sort of what logical bugs exist in their program, and we're going to demonstrate Debug 50 in a moment. Before we dive into Debug 50 or switch to our next set of tools, do we have any questions on CS50 IDE, CS50 Lab, or CS50 Sandbox? I see a few questions in the chat. Are the bit.ly link a snapshot, or would they later reflect the changes of the sandbox? So right now, I think, David, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a snapshot, but in a future version, that might change. But I think currently it is a snapshot. So they correct. Will not reflect later changes. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, awesome. And then another question in the chat here says, my district blocks GitHub. Can you share links to support my argument for the value of security in GitHub? I think we might be able to do that. We are constantly thinking about sort of improving these tools and sort of generalizing them more and maybe including some other tools. So that's something that's been under our radar as well. So we have been thinking about that. Let me maybe defer to Brian to see if we can share any links that support any of these claims. Labs are not persistent, right? No, so that's something that I actually forgot to mention at the beginning, and I apologize for that. Labs are persistent. If a student visits the URL for one of the labs and then work on their assignment, or maybe close a tab and leave it and come back later, they will see their progress for this particular assignment. The nice thing about labs is that each lab has a separate programming environment, so to speak. And so if you create a lab for Mario and then a lab for credit or a different assignment, these two programming environments will have their own files, will have their own contents. And so progress is saved and persisted separately in each of them based on which assignment they're part of or they're linked to. That is a good question. All right, other questions on any of these tools?
Kareem, this is Gloria again. I just wanted to make a small suggestion on the interface for, I don't know, future versions. Okay. In my lab, I have multiple sections of AP CSP, and a lot of the students would forget to sign out, and the incoming class would then be working under, you know, somebody else's account. So I always had to remind them to look in the address bar and double check that they were in their account. But I'm wondering if there's a way to add something where it says welcome and it says the username more explicitly so that it's clear to the user if they're signed into their account.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand, you are talking about two identical or almost identical labs in two different accounts and then people accessing the wrong one? Is that what you're saying?
I'm talking about the CS50 IDE that on the page there isn't really any indication of your username. Have to go into the address bar and make sure that, you know, that you're signed into your account.
Yes, it actually used to be the case that the CS50 IDE would show your username at the top in the URL bar, and we had to sort of revert this change for technical reasons. But we're actually hoping to bring this back later to sort of show which user is logged in, which IDE which user does this IDE belong to, and things like that. So that's a very reasonable and very good suggestions, and we're definitely working on that. Thank you for that. All right, other questions on any of these tools?
Sorry, Kareem. I'm not sure if you mentioned this already. I just posted it in the chat also, but was collaboration just a feature of the CS50 IDE, or was it also available in CS50 lab as well? Students were going through a lab together, could they collaborate on a lab or just only through the IDE?
So collaboration is actually a feature of the CS50 IDE. It's not currently a feature of the CS50 lab. However, given that we're hoping to merge these tools in the future, it could be the case that collaboration would become a feature of CS50 Lab in the future. Currently, it is not the case. It's only a feature of the CS50 IDE. All right, let's switch up to our next set of tools to demonstrate some of these tools and also demonstrate the IDE as well. And the next set of tools are tools that help students while working on their assignments. And so the first tool here is a graphical debugger called Debug50. And if you're not familiar, a debugger is a program that you can use to sort of step through your programs one step at a time to figure out what the logical errors are. So there are different kinds of errors that people can make while writing code or creating their own programs. One of them is, you know, syntax errors. So the syntax for whatever language you're writing in is not quite correct. And as a result, your program would sort of fail to build or fail to run in some cases. There are stylistic errors where the code maybe compiles or runs correctly without a problem, but it doesn't look great on the screen. Indentation is messed up. There are very few comments, which makes it harder for other people to read the code and understand it. And so these are stylistic errors. And then there are logical errors where your code maybe is syntactically correct. It has maybe good style. It compiles correctly, it runs correctly, but it doesn't quite give the result that we expect. And so this is known as a bug in computer programming. And so Debug50 is actually a tool that sort of helps us try to figure out what logical errors we have, what bugs we have, and then proceed and fix it. Like I mentioned before, Debug50 does support C, C++, and Python programs at the moment. And this is what it looks like. So let's actually go ahead and try Debug50 in the CS50 IDE. So I wrote a buggy program in advance. If you want to follow along these steps, I'm going to sign into my CS50 IDE by visiting ide.cs50.io. And then I'm going to run this command in the terminal window, as we see here, to download this buggy program that I wrote earlier. And then I'm going to use debug 50 in order to try to figure out what the logical bug in my program is. So let me sign into my account here at ide.cs50.io. Let me zoom in just a little bit so we can see better. Click sign in with GitHub. And then this is just going to take a few seconds. And ultimately, we should be redirected to our CS50 IDE environment. Like David mentioned earlier this morning, the CS50 IDE is also based on another IDE called AWS Cloud 9. All right, so here's my CS50 IDE. I don't have anything in it yet, so I'm going to download my program, although I can as well create files like before by clicking the plus icon and then create a new file. Or I can, if I want more than one terminal, I can also create a new terminal. Let me go ahead and download a pre-existing buggy program that I created, https://tinyurl.com/workshop-sum-osum.c. So this is a program written in a programming language called C, if you're not familiar. And the purpose of this program, theoretically, is to compute the sum of all numbers of all integers between 1 and n inclusive. All right, so let me try this program. So the way I would build this program or compile this program in the CS50 IDE is by running make and then the name of the program, which is sum.
Sorry, Kareem.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, can you please just zoom in and make the text a little bigger so that we can see? Because it's too small. Thanks.
Sorry about that. Is that better, hopefully?
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Awesome. All right. So again, I built my program using make sum. Make, and then the name of the program, the name of my source code file without the C extension. Hit enter to execute my command. And now if you notice here on the top left corner, although maybe it's a bit small, I can see a different file got created that's called sum. And this represents the program that I'm going to use to run. And so the way to run this program is by writing .sum. In this case, it's asking me for an integer. So I'll give it an int. 3, for example, the sum of the numbers from 1 to 3 is 3, which is not quite correct. If my math is right, 1 plus 2 plus 3 is 6, not 3. Let me try just with another number, just for good measure. Same thing with 4, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 should be equal to 10, not 6. So clearly there's a logical error in my program, or there's a bug in my program. So how does one go ahead and debug such a program? Well, the first thing that we'll need to do is set what is called a breakpoint. And this will represent a point in my code on which my program will essentially pause execution or stop execution for a moment, right? So a good rule of thumb here is to sort of set this breakpoint near where you think the logical errors happen, especially in large programs. But if you're not quite sure yet where the errors happen, maybe an alternative is to set a breakpoint in the first line of your program. So I'm going to go ahead and do that now by clicking to the left of the line number where I want my program to pause temporarily, right? So in this case, line 7. And then in the command line, I'm going to get back to the terminal here and write debug50.sum, hit enter to start my debug50 program. And then you can see this panel popped up here on the right-hand side, as we can see for debug50. And we can see this line immediately getting highlighted in yellow, meaning that this is the line that's about to be executed next once I take another step. And so how do I take another step? If you notice this panel up here, there's a few buttons. One of them is the step over buttons. And if you hover over these buttons, you can see the tooltip that says what they do. So the step over button is a button that allows me to sort of step or take one step or execute the current highlighted yellow line right now. So if I do that, this line happens to be using the get int function from the CS50 library, which prompts the user for an integer on the command line. And so it's asking, give me an integer. So I'm going to go ahead and do that, type 3 and hit enter. And now it's highlighting the next line, which is the one that's about to be executing, creating a variable called sum, setting its value to 0. If I step over here, I can take a step more, one more step. And you can actually notice here under the local variable panel, I can see my local variables and their values. So that's quite useful when debugging as well, to know what variables I have and what values exist at the moment in these variables. So in this case, n has the value of 3, which is the value that I provided to the get int function. Sum has a value of 0, and I'm ultimately going to be using this variable to sort of sum up the integers that I want. I has some negative weird value. This is known as a garbage value, if you're not familiar, because I technically hasn't been assigned yet, hasn't been executed yet. And it's going to execute on this line, line 9, once I step over. So once I do that, I'm going to enter the loop. I is now 1, and 1 is less than 3 in this case, which is true. So my loop executes. I'm going to add the value of I into sum. And so sum is now 1. I'm going to step over one more time. I is 2, 2 is still less than 3, and then I'm going to add the value of 2 to the current value of sum, which is 1, so the total value of sum will be 3, as you can see here on the right-hand side. And then theoretically, I should also loop in one more to add the value of 3 to the value of sum, but what happens when I step over is that I actually exit the loop and jump right to the next line, or the line that's following the loop, which is not correct. Now, you might have called this very early on in the beginning, and the problem here is obviously an off by one error, one of the most common errors in programming. It's either doing something one fewer time or one more time than you want it to be done, or one more than it should be done. And so there are a couple of fixes here, the simplest of which is to actually add an equal sign after this less than sign here in the program. And I can simply resume my program, or I can interrupt it in the command line by pressing in the terminal and then hitting Control C. And so if I save now this program after I added this fix, recompile my program again, so make sum, program compiles correctly, which is great, and then run it again with the value of 3. Okay, now I'm getting that the total of the sum of the numbers between 1 and 3 are 6, which is correct. I try it with a value of 4, then I'm going to get that the sum is 10, which is correct. So this is how debug 50 works in a nutshell. Any questions on debug 50? I'll give a few moments. If anyone has any questions on debug 50?
Kareem, could you, I still see the Mario screen on your shared screen. Is there any way to see more of the other screen?
Yes, of course. Is that better? Sorry about that.
Oh, I have to go.
All right. Other debug 50 questions?
I think you said this already, but you said this only works with C and Python, correct?
C, C++, and Python at the moment. In the future, maybe we'll add more languages, but currently it does work for C, C++, and Python. Okay, I got another question in the chat right now. Are there translated versions of the hints provided by debug 50? Right now, unfortunately, there is no translated versions of that. But we can actually follow up with the Cloud9 team to see if they have any plans to sort of internationalize their tool to sort of have more translated versions of it. But that's a really, really good point. Thank you. All right. So next up, we have our Check50 tool. And Check50 is a command line tool, meaning a tool that can be used in a terminal, for example, for automatically checking the correctness of our code. So checking if the code sort of does what it's supposed to do in terms of adhering to the specifications that the assignment has. And so Check50 also provides teachers with simple APIs for writing these automated checks, and students can then use Check50 for sort of automatically checking their code for correctness. And we do actually use Check50 as well on the back end for automatically grading student submissions. And so Brian will talk actually about this tomorrow. If you want to attend Brian's session or maybe watch it later, he's going to go into more details about how to write Check50 checks and how to use Check50 into more details. Check50 also has Git and GitHub support, so the checks can live on GitHub and can be managed by Git, which gives us some more flexibility in terms of revisions that we can keep track of in terms of branching off for different semesters. And so here's an example of using Check50 for checking an assignment that we have in CS50 called Hello, in which the user should write a C program that prompts its users to enter a name and then greets these names. So in this case, I can see some passing checks. So the student would run Check50 and then some problem identifier. And then after a while, they would see the results. So I can see some passing checks indicated by the green smiley faces. I can see some frowny faces, frowny red faces, indicating that the checks for these particular test cases have failed. And then maybe if I click on this link, I would see in more details maybe, or in a more beautiful form, the same results on the web using a web browser. So let's go ahead and try check 50 real quick. I'm gonna go head back into my CS50 IDE right now. I'm gonna write a very simple C program. So I'm gonna include stdio.h, and then I'm gonna do int main void. And don't worry if you're not familiar with any of this syntax, it's just for demonstration purposes. Printf, hello. And so let's save this file as, by pressing Control S or clicking File Save As, hello.c, and then clicking Save. Now I have my hello.c file in my file browser here on the left. So I'm gonna run check 50, CS50 problems, 2020x hello, which I know is the unique identifier for my problem. And so this is how we can use check 50. I'm gonna log in with my GitHub username and my GitHub password. And assuming everything is correct, hopefully this will take just a few seconds. And then ultimately, we're gonna see the results of automatically checking my hello program if it meets the specification for the hello assignment or not. So right now it's uploading my code to GitHub in order for our remote servers to clone this code and then run the checks on it, basically. And then now it's waiting for the results to be ready. And then once it's done, I can see that my program exists, my program compiles, so these two checks have succeeded, but it failed to actually output the correct output. If I click on this link here, I'm gonna go to our submission platform, submit.cs50.io, and then if I zoom in a little bit more, I can see basically the same result with some more details and some more beautiful formatting here. All right, so any questions on check 50 so far? Again, Brian will talk about this in more details tomorrow, so feel free to tune in on that or watch it later in order to know how to use check 50 or even write checks or use some of our existing checks. The documentation for CS50 exists on cs50.read.docs as well, so please feel free to head to this link and learn more details about check 50. All right, I'm gonna move forward.
Kareem, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Generally speaking, most of the labs and the assignments already have the checks enabled. You don't have to write any new ones unless you're creating new assignments that you want to actually automate the checks for. Is that a correct assessment?
Yes, a lot of our problems actually do have automated checks. We were kind of faced with these problems where students were sort of relying on check 50 more than they should. By sort of ignoring the compilation step and running the program step, or maybe testing their programs manually and then just using check 50 for the get-go. So we sort of took check 50 away from the first few problems, but then we bring it back, I think maybe somewhere in the middle of the semester. And then we take it away when the programs get complicated enough, when students are working on their final projects, for example, where there's no sort of strict specification of what they can do. And things are more flexible. But pretty much all of our checks are open source. So if you go to github.com/cs50/problems, you can actually take a look at some of these checks, take a look at the underlying code for implementing these checks, and also see what checks are available. And again, Brian will talk a bit more about how to sort of create these tomorrow and how to use them. So I just got a question in the chat. How do students use check 50? Do students memorize the identifier of the problem? And in our case, we actually provide the steps to run check 50 for a particular problem in the problem specification itself. So when students try to work on a problem, we have a section maybe toward the beginning or toward the end of the assignment where students can just copy and paste the check 50 command into their terminal and run check 50 on their solution. So in this case, I just happen to know the unique identifier for the problem that I want to check, but ideally I would copy and paste this from somewhere instead of memorizing it. Good question. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and move to our next tool, So we talked earlier about different kinds of errors, and among these kinds of errors are stylistic errors, where the code maybe compiles correctly, maybe runs correctly, but is not stylistically very good, meaning, you know, things are out of place, or there are a few comments, which makes it sort of harder for other people to parse and read. And so Style 50 is a tool that allows students to automatically check their code for style errors and then fix these errors on their own. And so let's take a look at how Style 50 works, and feel free to also follow along this if you would like. So I'm in my CS50 IDE at ide.cs50.io. And then I pre-wrote a program that is intentionally badly styled, although it's very common for students who are doing programming for the first time, especially, to sort of make these stylistic errors unintentionally. So I'm going to download this badly styled program from tinyurl.com/workshop-abs. And then I'm going to name this file abs.c. And now I have this file here. As you can see, once I open this file, let me hide this a little bit, or actually let's move it down here so that we can see better what we're doing. Okay, so let me clear the screen. And I have now my program, which is supposed to compute the absolute value of some integer, for example, and it has two functions. One of them is very horribly styled, as we can see right here, like these, braces, for example, shouldn't be here. There should be some indentation for the statements that are within the body of the if statement. And so I don't think this code follows our CS50 standard, let alone any standard. And so one thing I can do here is to run style 50 on my program. So I'm going to say style 50 in the terminal, space, name of the program, apps.c, press enter. And then I'm going to be presented with an output like this. So the red things, or the red highlights here, are things that style 50 is suggesting to be removed from the code. The green things are things that style 50 thinks should be added to the code. So in this case, style 50 thinks that I should remove these leading two spaces before this opening brace. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. It thinks that I should indent my if with a couple more spaces. So I'm going to do that. Same thing with the following brace. And then I'm going to indent this with 8 spaces in this case. The return statement, and then this with a couple more spaces. And I think it's also suggesting this at the end to remove the two leading spaces before the closing brace. So I'm going to go ahead and save that and then try style 50 again to make sure that my style 50 is happy. And style 50 thinks that it looks good, but I should probably consider adding more comments. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that. Multiply Multiply by -1 if value is negative, for example. So I'm gonna comment. And then here I'm gonna say return absolute value. Let's see if style 50 is happy about that. And it says looks good, everything looks good. All right, so we do use style 50 as well for automatically grading style on our end. And so that's another thing that we do. But students can use this, like I said, to check for their stylistic errors and fix them on their own, which ultimately leads to code with much better style and much more readable and parsable by other users, or by you as a teacher, of course, when you're grading. Any questions about Style 50? Style 50 supports languages like C++, and JavaScript and Python at the moment, at least, but there's no reason why it shouldn't support more. I think there's a possibility for that as well. Any questions on Style 50? All right, so our next tool is called Help 50. And like I said before, one of the problems that students run into, especially early on, are syntax errors and compilation errors and all of that, which can be quite cryptic, especially if you're working in a language with a language like C, but this is also the case for other languages as well. And so Help 50 is a command line tool that provides students with TF-like feedback and hints on cryptic error messages. Let's see an example of that. So here I have a very simple C program called hello.c that simply prompts the user for their name and then prints or greets them by printing hello and then that name, whatever the name is. But I seem to have missed or did something wrong with this code. When I try to build this code, as we see at the bottom of the screen, in my terminal here, it outputs very cryptic errors. Implicit declaration of function getString is invalid in C99. Now, when I see that as a student who was taking C for the first time, this can be very scary. If you have some more experience, maybe you recognize what the problem is, and maybe you know how to fix. But for students in particular, probably the most of them, first thing that you would think of is, you know, ask a TF, which would create a lot of frequently asked questions about similar problems like these, or they can maybe ideally go online and search for some of these errors and then try to understand what they mean. But then alternatively, they can use help 50 in this case, and they can do that by prefixing the command that they are trying to run, which is make hello at the top here, as we can see, by the help 50 command. So help 50 make hello instead of just make hello. And then what help 50 does is that it runs this command, it takes the output, parses the output, and if it recognizes one of the error messages, it would actually display some helpful feedback or some helpful hints on this cryptic error message. So in this case, it detected or it recognized the implicit declaration of function getString is invalid in C99 message, and it's providing some user-friendly feedback here at the bottom, if you can see. You seem to have an error in your hello.c on line 5. By implicit declaration of function getString, clang means that it doesn't recognize getString. Did you forget to include cs50.h atop your file? And in this case, it turns out to be correct that I forgot to actually include cs50.h at the top of my file because I'm using a function called getString, and getString just happens to be declared in this .cs50.h file. So once I do that, we can see that the error goes away. And let me actually go ahead and open that here. I think I have the same program here. Let me just add this getString call and say name here, and then try to reproduce the same problem here. So make hello. It prints out the same error, as you can see. Let me move this down here so that we, can I move this? I cannot, all right. Let me drag this terminal up here so we can see a bit more of the screen, okay. So if I, instead of running make hello, which showed all of these errors there earlier, if I run help 50, make hello, I'm then gonna see this. It's gonna take a moment to sort of run my program, my command, and then parse the output, and then it would show me this same message of including cs50.h atop my file. So I'm gonna go ahead and try that out. So include cs50.h and then save, try again to compile, make hello. And now my program, as you can see, compiles correctly. And if I run it, it should run without a problem. All right, so this is help 50 in a nutshell. Help 50 also supports a few other tools, including make, bash, including clang, including cp, ls. All of these are Linux or Unix command line utilities that students would use in their terminal to sort of interact with their IDE and a bit more. Help 50 is also extensible, and the helpers, which match these error messages or map these error messages to some user-friendly feedback, also exist online at github.com/cs50/helpers. So it's extensible as well. So feel free to contribute to that if you want to. And yeah, that is help 50. All right, any questions on help 50 before transitioning to our last couple of tools? All right, our last couple of tools are particularly useful for teachers, and these tools are Render 50 and CLI 50. So what is Render 50? Render 50 is a web application and a command line tool with which you can generate syntax highlighted PDF using source code. So I know David mentioned one use case for Render 50 earlier in his session today. For example, he happens to be printing out or converting source code to PDFs and then printing that out with like syntax highlighting and line numbers and all of that, and then using it with his notes during maybe lectures or class. You can also render two source code files side by side in order to compare them, or you can convert a file to source code file to PDF in order to do some annotation on the file. And so let's take a look at how this tool works. So if I go to render.cs50.io in my browser, I'm gonna be presented with this very simple UI like this. If I click browse, I can go ahead and select my source code file. I'm gonna go ahead and select, you know, sum.c for example, and then I can just click render, And within a few seconds, my file is converted to a PDF, like we can see here, with some line numbers on the left-hand side, with some syntax highlighting indentation, and it looks great. So I can either print that right away if I want in Chrome or other browsers, or I can download it and use it later. Same thing if I try to render two files side by side. So I'm going to select more than one file in this case, sum.c and apps.c, for example. So I selected these two files here, and then I can choose to render side by side instead of just render. And after a few seconds, it's going to generate a PDF out of these two source code files, rendering them side by side here for comparison purposes. All right, so this is it for Render 50. It turns out that Render 50 is also a command line tool, so you can use Render 50 on the command line if that's something that you would prefer. And there are documentation on how to use Render 50 on cs50.readthedocs.io/render50. So please feel free to go ahead and visit that for more information. And then finally, we have CLI 50, which is another command line tool for providing a headless alternative to some of our programming environments that we mentioned at the beginning. So things like CS50 Sandbox or the CS50 IDE. If you prefer to work locally, maybe on your computer, on your Mac or PC, but still have access to a very similar environment with all the tools installed and configured the way you want, you can go ahead and install CLI 50. CLI 50 requires Docker, so you're gonna go ahead and install this tool called Docker as well, which is a tool that basically allows us to package applications and configurations together. CLI 50 wraps this up basically and provides a very simple interface for creating what are so-called containers with all of our tools installed and configured. And so we see a screenshot here as an example. I'm here in my PC or Linux terminal. And then if I do list the files in my current folder, I can see a file called hello.c. If I then run CLI 50, I can see that the prompt changed to something here that says /mnt for mount, and it looks blue and it looks different. So right now I'm in this sort of speed container or headless IDE environment. If I list the files again, I can still see the same files that I have on my host computers, and I have the same tools available for me. So I have check 50 available in this case, style 50, help 50, render 50, and more. And so this is a headless alternative to the CS50 IDE, to the CS50 sandbox, if you'd like to still work locally. But it does require that you install CLI 50 and install Docker. So please go ahead and visit cs50.readthedocs.io/CLI50 in order to see instructions on how to install these tools. All right, thank you so much for joining us today. Like I said, you can reach out to me anytime at kzdan@cs50harvard.edu if you have questions on any of these tools that we discussed. I'd be happy to answer. Thanks so much for Brian and David and Yella, Rongxin, and Josh for helping with questions in the chat. And I'll see you soon.